7 FM Santa Barbara and worldwide on the web at www.kpfk.org. If you believe in radio not sponsored by corporations but sponsored by you, the people, please call and make your pledge at 818-985-5735. That is 818-985-5735. Peace and love.
Hello and welcome to the Car Show on 90.7 KPFK FM, broadcasting on this frequency for over 50 years. What else have you got in Los Angeles that has lasted 50 years? Okay, I have, and then a few more on top of that. We are glad to have you here. Welcome to the new year. Happy New Year to everyone. First of all, who do we have here? We have, in addition to our wonderful regular guest, our co-host, Michelle Spencer, our Orange County Bureau Chief, practicing attorney, member of the Motor Press Guild, and the owner of two Mazdas, a Miata and an RX-8. Michelle Spencer, welcome.
Yes, and from Los Angeles for more than 50 years.
That's right. You grew up in the South Bay.
Yes, I did.
Good for you. Congratulations. I grew up in the South Bay, but then real estate forced me to move away. It's sad, sad story. But enough about me. We are also very lucky to have our semi-regular guest host, an automotive journalism veteran with a resume that is so long, we would have to take 2 weeks here. But let's just say, you know, we only have 58 minutes. Let's say he started at Super Street and is now an executive analyst at iccars.com. Carl the Power Brower. Welcome, Carl.
Nice. Hey, I'm trying to catch up with you guys. It was my 30-year anniversary living in Los Angeles in August. So I'm getting there.
That's right. You moved from somewhere way back east, didn't you?
Not that far back. Golden, Colorado. So only about halfway. Oh.
Halfway back. Well,
you're still welcome. Western. Yes.
Yep. Welcome, Carl Brower. Always good to have you on the Car Show here at 90.7 KPFK. FM, Los Angeles. I just like saying that. Let's dive right into the calendar because we have 56 minutes now. First of all, we can't get to everything, and there are so many things that go on around here that are the smaller things, the cruising, the donut derelicts, the wreck and runs, the rallies, everything. There's too many to list here. So what I'm recommending that you do is go to SoCalCarCulture.com, and there's a calendar there that will just exhaust you. You can go somewhere every day, and on the weekends there's like 25 things you can do all over Southern California. A lot of them are really cool, so check that out. There are not a lot of events in the greater scheme of things right now because of the time of year that we're facing, with not as many big deals going on. So the first event that we have on our list is, and it's a good one, the Pomona Swap Meet, January 19th in the parking lot by the drag strip at the Fairplex in Pomona. Get there early, like 5 a.m., and bring a wagon for all the useless junk you're going to buy. Hubcaps, spare parts, hood ornaments you didn't know you loved until you saw them. That's the Pomona Swap Meet, January 19th. Get there. It's in the morning, all morning long, but you get.
And that's a Sunday.
Sunday.
Yes.
Sunday. Thank you, Michelle. Our legal attorney is stepping in to verify, to clarify some things, which is what they do, and we appreciate it. Thank you, Michelle.
Hey, real quick, I'm checking my schedule right now. I have got so much stuff, and the last time I went to Pomona, I was shocked at how well I did there. So I'm just endorsing the fact that if you can get there on the 19th of January, and now I'm thinking seriously about I might get there. It's been a couple of years. Very effective show. Anyways, carry on.
Wait a minute. You're talking about the swap meet?
Yeah, the swap meet at the Pomona.
Ah, you did well? What did you get?
I did well. I sold. I took stuff I needed to unload, and I bought I had a space, and I was quite thrilled with how much stuff moved.
Nice. What did you sell? I want to hear. Porsche parts.
Oh, man. I had like cars. I had some parts. I had tires. I had wheels. You know,
dang.
I had a whole bunch of stuff.
Good for
little
you.
Toy so cars.
There's a testimony. Go to the Pomona swap meet and get rich. Clear out the garage.
Yes.
make your spouse happy. Notice I did not say wife, non-pejorative. Spouse is the word I used, right, Michelle? I'm in the clear.
That's it. You're good.
Okay. So that's the first one. Now, we're, of course, as you know, Irwindale Speedway closed. So I was out there. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. But that kind of wipes out a lot of motorsports in Southern California. And so we used to have Thursday Night Thunder there for the drag strip, the 8th mile drag strip. We had the Oval where they had all kinds of what used to be called Winston West racing, all kinds of stock car racing. Michelle, you've been there a lot, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's gone. And so just to remind you, other things that are either delayed or gone, the NHRA Winter Nationals, they used to start the season out at Pomona every, what was it, February, Michelle?
Always. And I used to always go, yes, February.
Well, now they're starting their season in Florida. What is wrong with these people? Followed by Arizona. And they don't get out here to what is now the Lucas Oil NHRA Winter Nationals until March 27th to 30th at the In-N-Out Burger Pomona Drag Strip. I'm telling you, the world is changing and I don't like it.
No, but at least you got the name of the drag strip right.
That's right. Very important to name your sponsors. In-N-Out Burger. They are also co-sponsored by Cardiac Care of and no, they
well,
are not. I made that up.
But, you know, I don't know why they made this change. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's so traditional. I mean, for many, like we're talking decades, it's always been in Pomona to kick it off.
Yeah. It was one of the first places that they had it. You know, the very first NHRA national meet was in Kansas or something. I guess they picked that because it was the middle of the country. But and then, of course, with Irwindale gone and with Fontana gone, long gone now. The closest NASCAR Cup race that you can do, talking actual, you know, big time cup race, is going to be at Phoenix March 9th, Las Vegas March 16th, and Sonoma July 13th. That's all a long drive, no matter how you go. But put that on your calendars and, you know, something. Mm-hmm. It's fun. You'll have a fun time. Yeah. And let's just, since we're going way out, Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach will celebrate 50 years of racing when it runs April 11th to 13th. Get your tickets now at gplb.com. Now owned by Roger Penske.
I added that.
Oh, is he the one who's... Who's the driver you adore?
Joseph Newgarden.
Is Newgarden a Penske driver?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
And he just recorded a whole bunch of, he was out here in LA, recording a whole bunch of promo stuff.
How do you know that? Where's the line that stalker, you become a stalker? You go from fan to stalker.
He really should just go and get the protective order right now because I definitely stalk him.
Oh, well.
Everything he does on his Instagram, I know exactly what's happening.
This is worrisome. But, okay, yeah. How about down south of the border, the 38th SCORE San Felipe 250 will take, that's the season opener. They have four races down in Mexico now, take place April 2nd through 6th in San Felipe, Baja California, Mexico. The race is the first round of the 2025 SCORE World Desert Championship. San Felipe, if you've ever been, is this nice little town right on the top of the Sierra Cortez, right there on the Baja California Peninsula. And that's always fun. That's a very, very dusty sport. So, and if that's not enough dust for you, may I suggest January 31st to February 8th, King of the Hammers. Now, I've been out to that. And like I say, I think I was a couple years ago that I was out there and I still have dust in one or both nostrils from that event. It's a lot of dust. It turns into, they take Johnson Valley, a dry lake bed, and it becomes this city of fiberglass, RVs and motorhomes. And they say over 100,000 people are out there. It starts out with King of the Motos and that takes several days. And then they do King of the Hammers, which is the four wheel vehicles. And they have lots of stuff to entertain you out there. You can camp in your RV for $38 Or you can volunteer. And if you have a four-wheel drive vehicle and you can help people yank vehicles that are stuck and get them unstuck, you can volunteer. There's all kinds of things you can do as a volunteer. So that's lots.
It's not just unstuck, also on their roof when you want to help flip vehicles back over that are on their roof. Because that happens once in a while at King of the Hammers.
Yeah, it happens a lot. Yeah.
If you're driving properly, yeah.
There was one guy who famously, he was so stuck, you know, he was not going to finish the event. So the next day, helicopter came out, hooked the thing up, and brought it back. That's you really got to love that race car. That was not a, you know, a Baja bug or anything. That was.
Now, we've all had our race cars brought home by helicopter. I mean, come on, it's not that big a deal.
Right.
Oh, Michelle, take us to, speaking of In-N-Out Burger.
Yes.
Take us to In-N-Out's big event that's coming up.
Yeah, so annual Cruisin' to Freedom event is taking place January 18th, 2025. That is a Saturday. And this is an all-day event if you want to. It's in three different phases. It's sort of like a car event that is a progressive party. So if you want to, you can start off with the cruise from Huntington Beach to Orange County Fairgrounds, and that starts at 3. If you don't want to do that, you can just join the party at the Orange County Fairgrounds. This is a foundation fundraiser that they do for combating the scourge of human trafficking. And so this raises money to support causes that are working against that problem and that crime. It's called the Slave to Nothing Foundation. And yes, it's part of the In-N-Out Burger, you know, philanthropy wing. And so what you do is sign up for whatever portion of that event you want to participate in. And you have to go to cruisin2freedom.com or go to the Slave to Nothing Foundation website, which is slavetonothing.org. So there's various prices depending on what you want to do.
All right. Okay. Slavetonothing.org, a good cause and a good cruise. Meekum presents Steve McQueen's Porsche 917K. This is the one. Michelle, you're familiar with this event, right?
Yeah, this is on Motor Trend TV and on Max. So HBO used to have HBO Max. Now they just call it Max. So if you have Max or you have Motor Trend TV, which since there's a merger or whatever, I don't know if it's going to be around, but who knows? Meekum presents Steve McQueen's Porsche 917K. And this is part of the hype machine leading up to the Meekum auction in January in Kissimmee, Florida. Do I get extra points for saying that properly?
Excellent. Very well.
And the actual Le Mans race vehicle is going to be up for auction in January 7th through 19th.
Okay. So there, that auction will probably be, this particular car will probably go either on or close to the 19th, right? Because January 7th, yeah, they're doing all those signs, right, and gas pumps. And
oh, yeah. They always leave the big stuff till like the end or Saturday night. So.
All right. Hey, and Meekum also has a motorcycle auction in Las Vegas, January 29th. To February 1st, and I don't know, every year I say I'm going to go out there. Sometimes there is an auction, a motorcycle auction in Las Vegas that overlaps with CES, and I can check it out. But, you know, who am I kidding? I don't have any money. I'm no Carl Brower.
I was just going to ask if you're going to be bidding on the Steve McQueen car. Come on, Mark.
Right. We could just all put our money together and
I was going to get one of those, I think I would like the 908. The open top 908, that seems to me to be the, not having driven it, the best handling vehicle car in the world. I don't know. It was made for hill climbs and did quite well in hill climbs. Seinfeld had one. He drove it at the Historics up in Monterey 1 year. And I don't know. I always mean to ask him that. Hey, you still got that 908? It's not like I see him that often.
Well, when you guys do lunch, you're saying,
yeah, well, you're going to do, what is it that they do? Cars and karaoke.
If you do meet Seinfeld, don't say anything stupid. That's what I learned.
Oh, right.
He doesn't appreciate that. He's, yeah, got no room for stupidity.
Absolutely, so, not.
You guys, yeah, would do much better, I'm sure. All right. Next event, Michelle.
Oh, yeah.
Down in your neck of the woods. You're our OC Bureau Chief.
Not only that, this is an Irvine event, and it's a new Cars and Coffee called Exotics and Espresso. Every Saturday starts at 9 o'clock. And the people who are putting it on are Premium Auto OC. They just opened an OC location. They've been in various locations before this. And there's supposed to be 2,000 parking spaces. It's actually held at an office complex. It's at 7535 Irvine Center Drive, off the 5 freeway near the 133. So give it a shot if you like fancy cars.
I should go check that out. That's pretty close.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bring one of your Porsches. Okay, yeah. I am making an executive decision. We are cutting. We are out of calendar items. We are going to jump right in the news because we have so much news. And we're going to start since we have our special guest, Carl Brower, and we want to keep him happy so that maybe he'll come on again. Carl, you're a great guy. Thank you. Thanks for coming.
I mean,
how was that? Is that good? Is that
Hollywood? When Mark's being genuine, you just can't stop him, you know, when he's being genuine.
I always say, when people say things like that, it's like, what do you want?
What do you want? Yeah. Well, Carl's going to, he works, what are you, senior analyst at iccars.com? iccars.com goes through, I think, my understanding, almost every transaction in the United States when a car is bought or sold or leased or something. So they know, and they analyze the amount of money exchanged for the car, and they have values, they have all kinds of stuff. And so that's where they get their data. They're not just making it up off the top of their heads. And Carl is going to, he is their spokes guy. So they just did a study on the best time to buy a car, right, Carl?
Yes, we did. And it was fascinating, as all our studies are, as you know, Mark, but because you basically, what we found is that it's surprising the swing in the good deal on a used car potential between different times of year. And what we did is we realized that on average, and what we defined as a good deal is a car that we feel is you're saving at least 5% compared to what we consider the true market value of a car. So if you can get a car for 5% or more below the true market value at any given time, you're getting a pretty good deal. And on average throughout the year, the chance of getting a good deal is about 33.1%. So literally like one in three. But if you pick the right time of year or the right holiday, as we list them by both months and holidays, those numbers go way up or way down. For instance, the best time of year to buy a used car is New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, which I know we just passed, but
and so we're bringing you this information on January 4th. Thank you.
Sorry. Thank you. missed it by that much, as Maxwell Smart would say.
That was my fault.
No, but it's actually really good. So generally speaking, the warmer the temperature, the more you pay. The colder the temperature, the less you pay. It's almost a straight line on an average monthly percentage of getting a good deal from January to June. It just gets worse. It starts great in January and gets worse every month till June. And then it starts to swing the other way and get better again all the way back to December. But you can also get the best deal, 47.9%. So remember I was saying 33.1 is your average throughout the 365 days a year. It's 47.9% that you can find a car for below 5% or more below fair market value on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day.
So I'm not good at math, but that's half of the time, right?
Yeah. No. So that, right. Well, no, that I think a better way to say it is your percentage chance of finding one is 33%, and it goes to, I guess you're right. I guess that's the way to think of it. I think of it as like a 50% improvement. When you jump from 33 Excellent. To 47.9, you've got a 50% improvement chance to get a good deal. And it's obvious. People are like, well, why? You know, and it's like, well, everything from the cold weather to the dealers and the manufacturers wanting to make their numbers, both for the end of December and the end of the year, to people being distracted. They've got, as we know, we just got through it. They've got gifts to buy. They've got relatives coming in. A lot of people are too busy during the holidays to think about buying a car. And dealers have to work harder to get them on the lot because of all these reasons. So the second best day to buy a used car for finding a deal is MLK Day, 43.3%. And then January as an entire month, which we're in right now, is as a whole month is a 41.1%. So January is in the top three. January is the best month. And it's throughout the month averages 41.1%. So not that far off the leading two holidays that I just mentioned. And if you're curious, and by the way, if you go to the site, you can see the full study and see all this stuff. But, you know, it starts to swing the other way as it gets warmer. And just if you're curious, Father's Day is the worst day to buy a used car, to find a deal, at least, to find a deal. It's actually, yeah, well, you know, it's like June. It's June is a terrible month. June, right. The month of June is negative 30.4%. So it moves the other way. And Father's Day is negative 33.1%. So it's literally like the opposite side of the average. And July 4th is negative 31.1%. So Father's Day, July 4th, June are all the worst times to buy a car. But, you know, Memorial Day is on this list. Mother's Day, May is the month. June, July is the month. All that is not a good time to buy a used car. Now, does that mean you shouldn't buy a car then? No, it just means your chances of finding a good deal have dropped dramatically. You can still find a deal. You can find a deal, good deal any day of the year. But your percentage chance of locating one goes up in the winter and down in the summer.
What would help people the most to get a good deal? I guess knowledge, right? Doing a lot of research would be helpful. Do you have any other helpful tips?
No, that's 100% it, Mark. That's what I always tell people is, as in so many things in life, knowledge is power. If before you ever get to the dealer, you've gone online, and it's so easy to do this at sites like IC Cars, but there's others out there too. I think there's some related to some color of some book or something. But anyways, there's sites out there that can help you find.
I can say it, but.
Oh, that's it. I forgot. That's what it is called.
I can say it, yeah.
I don't know.
Who
would ever even work there? I mean, come on. But anyways.
Especially as a senior executive.
I know. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. But no, Kelly's a good place to find the values. Car Gurus, you can go anywhere and find these values. But that's the whole point, is that long before you get to the dealership, you should know what the car's market value is. And then you should have multiple options. You should never go to the first dealer, look at the first car, fall in love, and buy it. Because the dealer will tell you, oh, there's 14 guys coming in right behind you if you don't buy it now. And they'll play all their games. And you say, oh, well, then I guess I'll buy it at this other dealership because they still have one. And by the way, I always tell people consumers don't realize the power they have over dealers. They always are scared and think the dealer has all the power. Once a dealer knows you're a serious buyer, that somebody is going to be getting thousands or tens of thousands of dollars in the next 36, 72 hours, and it might not be them, it kills them. Oh gosh, do they hate that? So you make it clear you're a serious buyer and you look at the car on their lot, and then you make it clear, well, you know what? I've got all this money. I think I'm going to go spend it at another lot because you're not willing to work with me on the price. And you watch them squirm and scramble trying to keep you on the lot.
Mm-hmm. And they want to get you into the F&I department, right? So you finance the car there at their dealership because they make twice as much money on it that way, right?
And that's the other thing. Not only should you know the car's value before you get to the dealer, you should have your financing in place before you get to the dealer, because you can probably do quite well at your personal credit union or bank or whatever. And I'm just going to make this up. Let's say you can come up with a loan for $20,000 and you can get an interest rate, well, in today's world, hopefully for somewhere around 5 or 6% on a new car. Now you go to them and they're going to be like, well, we can get you at 8%. I've seen this happen with myself and other people so many times. We can get you a 6% loan, 7% loan for $20,000. You're like, oh, you know what? Happened to already have my financing, $20,000, got it for 5.5%. I'm good. You know, I just made some calls. We can get 4.5%. Happens every time. So have your financing in place. And once again, watch the dealer scramble because you have a better option than they're first offering you. And all of a sudden, they've got a better option than you told them you could get.
But if you, Michelle, sorry.
Well, the question just was, do you think this would kind of extrapolate over to brand new cars as well as the used car market?
Exactly. This study was specifically on used cars, but most of these forces are true for new cars too, as far as, you know, the end of the year and the cold weather and people being distracted by holidays and the warm weather and people wanting to get new cars to go on family trips and everyone wanting to get out of their house and drive around, which drives up the prices in the summer. So all those are true. We don't have all the data like we did on the used cars for this study, but new, you're going to have the same basic forces in place.
And this is for buying a car at a dealership, right?
It's basically listings online, which are going to mostly be dealers. But private sellers probably also realize, oh man, you know, it's not the best time to try to sell my car in the week between Christmas and New Year's, for instance. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have to work a little harder to do it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, right. I looked up when Martin Luther King Day is, and it's this month. It's January 20th, which... there's another little thing happening on January 20th.
Oh, yeah.
So there might be a great... this might be such a distraction with these two events happening.
If you listen to KPFK,
happening.
Yeah, I think you'll be familiar with January 20th. So the irony.
Maybe the two will cross over. Like maybe people from the one will go do a march for the other or vice versa.
Yeah, but either way, this might be the best day of the year to go get a new car or use
that's
car.
Right.
There will be a lot of distractions. There will not be a lot of people thinking about buying a car. I always make the joke about like go skiing or go to Disneyland on Super Bowl Sunday. And this is going to be the same thing, right? If you're like, it's like so you walk onto a lot, the dealer's going to be like, what are you doing here? Don't you know what's going on? It's like, yeah, but I'm here. You got a deal for me? Because I it's a ghost town here, but if you make me a good deal, I'll stay.
Yeah. Right.
Excellent. Yeah, good. Excellent. Thank you, Carl. That's insight from a guy who actually knows what he's talking about. Not like me talking to you. This is Carl Brower from iccars.com. Thank you, Carl. He's sticking around. Don't worry. But we're going to go to our legal department now. And luckily, we have a staff attorney. Michelle is going to tell us about every year there's a whole bunch of new laws, and I don't understand any of them. But Michelle does. And Michelle, take it away.
Mm-hmm. Right. So this year, we're actually kind of short on new things that are going into effect on January 1st. And there's another set that might kick in on the next date, which is July 1st. But for now, January 1st, there's only two big things to be aware of. One is the daylight law, which has to do with parking. And the daylight aspect refers to letting the pedestrians cross the street and you have sufficient daylight to see them crossing. So the new law is Vehicle Code Section, just for the people who care about these things, 22500 subdivision N.
Wow.
And you cannot park within 20 feet of a crosswalk, whether it's marked or unmarked, or whether the curb there is red or not.
Okay.
So don't park by a crosswalk or by a curb where people are going to cross the street. Don't park there because you get ticket.
20 feet. Okay.
Mm-hmm, 20 feet. They are trying to paint the curbs in California, but as you know, it takes forever.
Well, that would be my defense. The curb was not painted. Therefore, I am not liable, right?
No, it won't
work. Right, Your Honor?
No, it won't work.
It won't work.
They'll say, thank you, Mr. Vaughn. Your fine is X. Just pay the fine. Get the heck out of my courtroom. And don't come back. Okay, number two to be aware of is insurance. Insurance in California has been at the minimum, you have to drive around with your policy of liability insurance for $15,000 per accident or per person, $30,000 per accident. And that's been the law since 1974. And the plaintiff's bar, which I'm not a member of because I'm a defense attorney, the plaintiff's bar lobbied the California legislators to get this raised for years and years and years, and they finally got it. It's doubling, and it's going to be $30,000 and $60,000. So
everybody has to have that?
Yes.
Okay. Those are the minimums now, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, that seems – you hear about these cases, and they're millions of dollars – and there you show up with like $30,000. It's like you're bringing a knife to a gunfight or something.
Right. And so, I mean, we see this a lot when our clients only have 15,000 or 30 policies.
Right.
We end up having just to give them the policy, even if it's a case where we could totally defend it. Uh-huh. The insurance company says, no, I don't want to pay for anything more on this. Just get rid of it.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you are one of those people who's still going around with 1530, which shame, 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 you shouldn't be because it's not enough.
No, especially if you own a home or you own anything.
Yeah, you should have an umbrella.
Because they'll come after all that, right?
Yes, you should have an umbrella policy for $1 million if you own a house.
And it's not that much more, right, to have an umbrella policy?
It is not. It's really pennies on the – it's cheap. It's such good insurance. It's a good investment, and it's just prudent financial –
What do you recommend for like a typical homeowner with a car driving around? I mean, obviously, I'm assuming you recommend more than the state minimum.
Oh, right? Yeah. I always recommend at least 150.
What does that mean? 150 per person?
So, if you like you rear end somebody on accident, and a 150 usually covers pretty much every claim. of okay. a minor accident. You know, they're going to have a neck problem or a back problem. They're going to have headaches. They're going to have to miss work for a while because they don't feel good. They might have to get chiropractic treatment, or you never know. But usually 100, 150 is good. I have 250. 250, 500.
Of course. Yeah. Because you have those two Mazdas too. I mean, that's well, collectibles. So.
I'm just, you know, paranoid, I guess is the best way to say it. I don't want to get sued.
I've never met a lawyer who isn't paranoid. It's almost like they know something that most people don't know.
They know a lot.
Yes. Well, okay. Anyway, so if you are a 1530 policyholder, you will get an automatic notice from your carrier at the next time it's up for renewal. So say like your renewal is in February. If you don't do anything, you will get a renewal policy and it'll be double, and it's going to cost you more. Don't think it's going to be the same. It okay. will cost you more money.
Will it double your insurance premium?
No, not necessarily. They're saying it's going to be more like 30 or 40% more. Okay. So close to 50, but not.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's reasonable because it covers everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, accidents are going to happen, and now insurance will help pay for the whatever happened in the accident. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know.
Right. So the other thing to make sure you always have is your uninsured and underinsured motorist coverage as part of your comprehensive package of insurance.
Okay. Well, that's right? What I was just going to say is thank God everyone driving a vehicle in California is insured. I mean, that's what really makes me sleep well at night. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Carl's being sarcastic. Where's
Carl
our Brower
for Senate? You heard
it
here.
Our sarcastic thing between
our
us.
Our sarcasometer.
Yeah, and he just set it off.
Yes.
There's actually a danger with this that people are going to go bare, which means no insurance because they
right.
do not want to pay the increased premiums. So
yeah. and
you
that
just
winds up costing a lot more should
yes.
something happen.
All of you need to go out and talk to your insurance company if you're right there at 1530 and figure out a plan and get more insurance and make sure you have UIM.
So real quick story, a Toyota 4Runner sideswiped my daughter in her 1988 Formula 350, Pontiac Firebird Formula 350, sideswiped it. Didn't really hurt it. That thing's kind of a tank, thankfully. But ultimately, it was his fault, the other driver's fault. I paid the deductible, got the car fixed. They never were able to get any money out of the guy. So my deductible, I should be getting my deductible back. In other words, there should be no out of pocket expense to me because someone hit me and it was proven to be their fault, or hit my daughter in this case. And yet I never got my deductible back because mm-hmm. they never got any money out of him. So.
Yeah. So your only recourse is to go to your own insurance company and put in a UIM claim or UM claim.
Uninsured motorist claim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That's what it's for.
All right.
And so you save your money, your receipts, and all the money you spent on that, and just make a claim.
Okay, there's our insurance update. Any other
this
laws?
This is good to know.
Good to know.
That's it.
That's it. Wow.
That's it. I told you it's kind of slim pickings for January.
Pretty barren year. Yeah, last year it was. We went on for like 8 or 10.
I know there were a lot
new laws that nobody knew about.
What are those legislators slacking or something? Come on, man. I get ready for the sarcasometer. I need more laws. I always feel like we're always just a few laws away from the perfect society. And if we just had more, we'd be there. Did that sound sarcastic? Okay. Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Senator Brower, we'll be back later with more.
Senator Brower.
Right now, we're going to go, and we're still lamenting. I know this happened a while ago. We're still lamenting the closure of Irwindale Speedway. Mm-hmm. 25 years. Nobody thought it would last that long. And it is still as good as new out there. The track has not shown any signs of wear and tear.
Uh-huh.
I was out there for closing night. It went on forever. But they had all kinds of racing out there. It is now done and over with. And I think the biggest impact that's going to take place on Southern California is going to be the loss of a drag strip. So there may be an increased number of knuckleheads out there drag racing on city streets. So mm-hmm. I was going to just point out that there are still a couple of drag strips sort of kind of available. There is a 1/16th mile drag strip. That's 330 feet at Paris, P-E-R-R-I-S. That's Michelle's favorite track, right?
Mm-hmm.
Paris Auto Speedway.
Yes.
Out there in Paris, California.
That's my home track.
That's your home track. And, you know, that sounds like fun. You know, 1/16th is better than nothing, right? Right.
Yeah.
So I looked at their website. It said no events at the moment.
Yes. So, Paris is on a pause till February.
Okay. So just hang on. Another, don't street race. Don't just hang on.
No.
Down south, even farther south than our Orange County Bureau is Barona 1/8 mile drags. Now, Irwindale's drag strip was also 1/8 mile drag. And, you know, I was there. We've all seen that track. And an eighth mile is, I think, is about the right for spectator viewing, because a quarter mile, it's way the heck down there.
Yeah. I got to say, nice, I agree with you on that. A 1/8 mile is perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's located on the Barona Indian Reservation, just 5 miles north of Barona Casino outside of San Diego, California. It's NHRA sanctioned. It's home to some of the best racers on the West Coast. This is what they say. And they can't print that if it's not true. Started out as a sand drag strip. I don't know if you guys knew that, but it was paved and converted to an 8th mile drag strip. So paved drag strip. It's your local place to race, they say. They have street legal Friday nights. They have the NHRA Summit Series, Barona Summer Series, Renegade Bracket Races, and much more. They'll even teach you how to race. So, you know, we
plus you get to say you get to say Barona a lot. I mean, that's a reason right there to go to the event. Barona.
And that song's going to get stuck in your head. My Barona.
Oh, no. No, don't do it. Don't do it.
It's too late. It's already been done.
Did you mention Famoso? I didn't think you actually said Famoso.
Famoso. I did not say Famoso. Okay. The interesting thing is the Tim Huddleston and family, who were running Irwindale, that whole facility, they are now going up to Bakersfield to run Famoso Drag Strip and the Kern County Raceway. So it's kind of the same thing, but it's just 2 hours north. Is it two and a half hours? Depends on where you're starting from, how fast you drive. Famoso, yeah. Home of the March meet. Now, I looked at the Famoso drag strip, and it was vague about when things are going to actually happen up until March 6th through 9th, which is the March meet. Now, anybody who was around in, boy, what was it, the 50s, the 60s, the March meet was a huge, huge, huge event, and everybody came from miles around. They ran nitrous. They did wheel standers, slingshot drag strips. This was not a cackle fest. These were two guys lining up with those, you know, at the time, I suppose there was some safety gear, but those were brave guys behind the wheel of this with the what do you call the differential right between your knees, ready to blow up at any time. You were sitting behind the engine if something went wrong. So there are a lot of those cars and a lot of those guys still around, and they race at the March meet in Famoso, which is on your way to Bakersfield up there. March meet, March 6th to 9th, Carl.
And that is a full quarter-mile drag strip. It's been way too long since I raced my Dodge Demon. I had a 2018 Demon, but I took it up to a couple of, I think it's called the Red List events, but they have those up there on a regular basis. And I've now got my Demon 170, and just hearing this, it's like, yeah, I need to get out there and get that thing down the track. I still haven't raced it. So
You still have the Demon? I didn't. Oh, man, I can't. What kind of fan am I? I can't keep track of all your cool cars. Okay. So my question about that is, how do you avoid terminal wheel spin? That's all. I would just spin the wheels. I wouldn't actually progress down the runway or drag strip or whatever.
It was really exciting when I took that thing up there, because I raced a lot when I was younger in cars where wheel spin was not nearly as challenging as that car was, as you can imagine, Mark. But yeah, I got that car up there, and I'll never forget the first time I was running it. And remember, it was supposed to be capable of a 9.65 quarter mile on a prep surface with everything perfect. But I was able to get that thing down to like a 10.2 and I just had never done, I don't think I'd ever done better than like a 12 or 13 second in some of my, you know, older muscle cars when I was a kid and stuff. And when I started pulling 11s and then was into the 10s and then into the low 10s, and I had to master the launch technique, as you're talking about, Mark. I got very good, but I've been doing it so long. I was thrilled that I was able to get that 840 horsepower car down the track and relatively proper level of, you know, mix between the wheel spin that you, a little bit you want to let the engine go, but not sliding too much.
And so you didn't have to obviously modulate a clutch or anything, right? You just,
no, it's all throttle.
Was there a program that managed all that for you?
So you can adjust like when peak torque and horsepower hits and like what the I think you can even adjust like when you do a power brake, how high it revs and stuff like that before it like lets go and before you let go on the brake and it engages and stuff. So Dodge has done their best to make, give you all sorts of toys to play with on the both the 18 and then the new 23 Demon 170 I've got now to try to make the most out of whatever level of traction you can get. But if you can get to a prepped track and get the thing to totally stick, the Demon 170 is supposed to do an 8.91 second quarter mile, which is a little nutty.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Man. Okay, speaking of acceleration, Chevrolet just recently announced that their ZR1 Corvette, the 2025 ZR1 Corvette, with the optional ZTK performance package, got 0 to 60 in 2.3 seconds on regular pump gas, no track prep, rear wheel drive, and just a guy driving the car down the track. 2.3 seconds. I mean, that's unheard of, isn't it? Is that crazy?
Well, I mean, if you look at how much you pay for that Corvette versus a supercar,
right?
That's how they win that race. Because
yeah, that Corvette's going to be about $150,000, I think, something like that.
That's all.
Has not been announced.
And so you put that against a Pagani or something, and you're looking at $500,000, right?
Yeah, easy. Over. So, in fact, they say it's the fastest production car under $1 million.
Yeah, there you go. Like that. That's what I was going for.
It does the quarter mile 9.6 seconds. Which, 152 Ooh. Miles an hour, something like that. 150 miles an hour, let's just round it off. And what I'm waiting for, they talk about the ZTK package. It sounds like it adds 1,200 pounds of downforce at top speed, okay? What they have to do is go to the Nürburgring and challenge the Mustang GTD's lap
yes.
time. And they should... Yes. They should be able to blow that away. What was that? It was a seven. It was very low sevens.
No, yeah. It was 6.57. It was the first. First American production car to break into the seven under the seven mark right. Minute mark at Nürburgring, and all the other cars are all European. So the GTD, I did a whole video on that thing, and it's a fascinating car, but I still think it probably weighs too much, and I'm not sure about the ZR1's weight either, but because the AMG GT Black Series 2021 model year, that thing weighs 3,600 pounds and it's 10 seconds faster. And its starting price was the same $325,000 that GTD is. So to me, it's like you're spending $325,000 and that car, they will not talk about the weight for it. I bet it's like a 4,000 pound car. And that's why.
Okay. But the Corvette is 150 maybe, so maybe more than that, maybe 180 whenever they announce the price. So it is still a bargain performance vehicle. We're all waiting for that to happen. No word from General Motors or Chevrolet about when and if they are going to go to Nürburgring, but that is the obvious next step for that.
Well, but the question for me is, I know Corvettes are good straight off the line. They're good straight, but what about the curves? So
Corvette. Oh yeah. They're good.
So?
You've driven them, right? I mean, they're well balanced. I mean, the front engine ones, you know, they had their own little picadillos. They were, you know, a little bit odd. But this, the C8 is
a mid-engine
rear drive, making over 1,000 horsepower. My goodness gracious!
But they're still too heavy, in my opinion. So,
yes,
the mid-engine Corvette is still weighs more than I think. I wish it would. I wish it was.
Do you have the curb weight in front of you? I don't have that.
I think that the like Z06 is like 3,800 pounds or 3,900 pounds.
That's not bad, you know.
Me, 3,500 is the cutoff. If I'm in a vehicle and I'm supposed to go around corners, here's my issue. How come 911s consistently weigh 3,500 pounds or less and don't kind of and don't?
Yeah,
the Germans do not allow curb weight.
So you throw
out the passenger seat. Throw out the spare tire.
Throw out all the wiring.
Yeah.
Well, I think the Corvette has got so much potential. It's got a mid-engine chassis, like you guys are saying. So it's good. All the hard stuff's done. What they need to do to that car is get rid of these stupid two golf club rule that they've always had with that car in the trunk.
Oh, that is dumb.
The stupidest thing. If they would get rid of the two golf club rule,
whether it's two sets of golf clubs or however you measure it, you have to have some practicality in the thing, right?
I don't think you really do, but even if you do for the main one, okay, fine. Sell all the C8s that you want. By the time you're getting Z06 and undeniably by the time you're doing ZR1s, by the way, guys, this isn't about going golfing. This car is about performance, and it could, and how much weight could they save? And I think they could make it look better because they could shrink that back end. I also think the car, even as mid-engine cars go, it looks a little bloated to me. So they could fix the styling and the weight to a large extent if they got rid of that trunk area and just did some lightweight work.
Okay. Well, this is what you call bench racing, folks. And we've been doing it better than anybody else this hour, this day. So bench racing here, I think yes. Carl won. He won the bench race. And speaking of massive power and performance, we have two cars we're going to review today, the Volkswagen ID Buzz and the Kia K4. Those are, how does that stack up on the Nürburgring? You think that would go right off into the forest?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd lose both. I think we'd lose both cars and all. They disappear into the green, the green in, hell.
Unter den Brücke, die Brücke. Yeah. So Carl got to spend more time in the VW ID Buzz. I got to drive it at the same time that he did the first time back in the at the car's introduction up in San Francisco. But Carl, you had another week in it. And now, for the record, I love the ID Buzz. And if it didn't cost $71,000, I would actually buy one. But, you know, I don't have that kind of budget. But you spent a week in it, so you have a better idea of how this car is to live with. What did you find out about the Volkswagen ID Buzz?
So a couple things that you probably already know. Everyone loves it. It's like this rolling smile machine. People, I had multiple people coming up to me. Most of them looked like they probably did at some point chase the Grateful Dead in an original bus from the look on their from the time frame that I would put them in. And they were just like blown away. Oh my gosh, I had women and guys and all of a certain age time frame, and they were just like freaking out. It drives really well, super roomy inside. There are so many positive things that I was very excited about the car and I wanted to drive it. And that's why I was a little annoyed that the first 3 days I drove it, or the first 3 days I had it for a week long loan, I had to charge it every one of those days because I was using it to run around and do something. And that range was just vanishing, Mark.
But the range is 220, 230, 240 miles, right?
234 with rear-wheel drive, 231 with all-wheel drive. I did have an all-wheel drive one. It was not, you know, I'll give you an example. I was somewhere and I supposedly had 79 miles left and I was a little nervous, but then I was going to go somewhere else and I was supposed to have, and it was supposed to take 17 miles to get there. So I was like, ah, that's 62. I'm just going to assume I'm going to be at 60. When I got to where I was trying to get to, I had 49 left. And then I was like, I don't know if I can get home now and all. So it was really constantly. And what I think part of the problem is, besides the fact that I've probably got more of a, I guess you can't say lead foot anymore when you're driving an electric car. But anyways, besides the fact that I probably drove it too aggressively, it's big, Mark, right? That thing represents a lot of displacement of air right. as you go down the road. And if you're driving it, I think consistently above 50 plus miles per hour, I think just the natural wind resistance that you're facing and the hole you're punching in the air with that thing is really bad for the range.
Yeah. But you know, another thing that I'm thinking when you were saying that is that you do not drive slowly. You do not gently ease onto the accelerator pedal. And when I'm in an electric car, I've spent a lot of time in electric cars. I own two of them. And sometimes you really have to conserve whatever range you have left. And so I tend to, and I know a certain segment of our listeners are going to hate this, but I go in the slow lane and I sort of draft behind a semi if I know that I have to save battery range. Now, I know that ain't about America. That ain't about freedom.
Right.
But, you know, it's practical and you can use your car for a lot of other things. So that would help your range. Now, a lot of people have said that the range isn't enough, you know, over 200 miles range, I think, would be more than enough. Neither one of my electric cars makes that. My Mitsubishi IMEV makes, I think, 50 miles range. Now it's got over 100,000 miles on it. And our 2019 Leaf, oh boy, what does that make? What kind of range is
150?
That? It was supposed to make 150 when it was new. And practically speaking, it's like 125, 130 or something. So I'm really adept at squeezing the maximum range out of an electric car, which might have been a difference. But you know, I just, that ID Buzz, man, I've been looking forward to that. What, for 20 years they've been saying they're going to do it. They've been teasing us with this. Finally, it's out now. And, you know, there are things about it that aren't perfect, but it's out and it's a phenomena. It's going to make minivans cool again, right?
It's a very cool car. I decided after my week loan in it, it's like, this car I really like. It's almost perfect. Swap out that EV for an internal combustion or plug-in hybrid drivetrain, and I'm all over it.
Yeah, put a 48 horsepower air-cooled flat four with a single carburetor there right after the fan shrouding. Yes, and crawl underneath it and adjust the valves every 800 feet.
Check the oil.
Feeler gauge. Who has had a feeler gauge? Who has used a feeler gauge in the last 50 years?
It sounds like a dirty word or something.
You pull the valve covers off, and the cork gasket is all soaked in oil, and you're under there trying to adjust the little rocker arm thing and feel the little. Oh my goodness!
These are the things that car guys live for. Come on.
No, actually, I've stopped living for those. I'm looking forward to an ID Buzz. I don't know how I'm going to get one because I don't have 71 grand to throw around on a car. I guess I could just never retire and buy one.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, you're going to be eligible for some sort of rebate, right?
Well, I'm hoping somebody runs into me and I can sue them, and Michelle will defend me.
There you go.
I had, just for the record, if anybody's writing this down, I had a 64 split window Volkswagen. We had a 77 at home. I had a 79, and now I have a 2003 Volkswagen van. So I'm a bit of a van slappy, as they say. An enthusiast, perhaps. I don't know. But
So you could sell a couple of those and get an ID.
No, those are long gone.
Well, you already sold.
Well, the 2003 Eurovan is still around, so maybe I can sell that. I don't know.
And those things are going up in value like crazy, I'm sure, right?
They were for a while. if you had a low mileage one, we're coming up on 200,000 miles on this thing. So,
just drive it to the dealer and say, I'll swap you straight across. Come on.
Straight across. My local dealer, Pasadena Volkswagen, and we're not getting paid by any of these guys. The guy told me that they are not inflating the price at all and that there's no waiting list. So you just, if they have one and you go in and you pay them, then you drive off with your new Volkswagen ID Buzz. So,
well, I think you better start stalking those guys on January 20th.
January 20th, I'm going to show up. Look, I know you've got acres and acres of ID Buzzes. Well, there's one school of thought that says that the ID Buzz is not going to be, it's going to be extremely popular for a year. And remember when the new Beetle came out, there were fights in the showrooms, there were lawsuits. And then like 6 months later, it's like, no, we don't want any more of those cars. Yeah.
Please come buy a new Beetle from us. Please. They're stacking up on our lot.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that something similar happens, but I think it'll be, I don't think it's going to happen because it's such a practical vehicle. You know, you can get it. The one that they're foisting on us now is the 3-row version. I think if they go to a rear drive 2-row version with a shorter wheelbase, I think that one could be sold for under 50. This is just me talking. I got no inside information. And maybe, you know, down around 40, who knows? But
better range too. Might have better range.
It would be lighter, less complex, less parasitic loss in a four-wheel drivetrain, although there's not much parasitic loss because they just put a motor at each axle and it goes straight to the range. That's the beauty of electric vehicles is that you don't, an internal combustion car, most of it goes to producing heat that just gets in the way and pollutes the atmosphere. An electric car, there's almost no losses in getting the power to the road, as they say. But
the loss is your time when you pull up to the Electrify America place and there's five cars waiting. Ask me how I know.
Yes, I agree with you. The charging infrastructure in this country is still lagging. But as more and more cars become eligible for the Tesla plug-in, you know, the superchargers, that problem will certainly dissipate to a certain extent. Right? Am I wrong about that? Or should we start talking about the Kia?
Do we have time? Do we have time to touch on the Kia?
We have time. We
have 5 minutes.
7.5 minutes. Five minutes. Michelle's much better.
We should talk about the ID Buzz more. I don't think we can fill 7 minutes with a Kia K4. No.
If we don't fill it, we'll go back and talk more about the ID Buzz. No, we'll talk about your Dodge Demon.
Okay. No. Carl. Yes, it's actually, I kind of like the car. I mean, Again, I had multiple experiences, including they just picked it up this morning.
I'm glad you said experiences. You said I had multi, and I got scared for a second there.
Yeah. No. We don't have the...
All right. Sorry. Go on. Sorry to interrupt.
No, it's a good car. The styling, it's funny. I thought I liked the styling, and then I started looking at it from the side and the rear three quarter, and it's kind of got a weird C-pillar by the roof.
It is funky C-pillar. It looks like kind of like a clown made it out of folded paper.
Yeah, I almost feel like it looks like an air
pillar connects to the roof. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's almost like an airplane fuselage thing or something, but not in a cool looking way. I don't know.
Yeah,
but anyways, the headlights are cool. The taillights are cool. The car does not have what I would call the same level of engaging driving dynamics as like a Civic or a Corolla,
which is a
strike against it. However, it's got a standard 12.3 inch central touchscreen, even on the most base model. And by the time you get to a mid-grade one, you get a 12.3 inch gauge cluster and a 5-inch climate control screen that all run together. So if you've been in any kind of new premium cars from BMW or Mercedes, you see this kind of wall of digital entertainment in front of you. And these are expensive luxury cars. You basically get the same effect by the time you get like the $25,000 version of the K4. And the K4 starts right at 23, by the way. By the time you get to the mid-grade one for like 25, 26, you get that wall of digital information that makes the car look pretty dang upscale and high tech inside.
It's really loaded. I mean, you get all the technology there. That is the most impressive thing, I think. And many of our colleagues were saying this on the launch, is that the most impressive thing about this is that it's loaded and at a reasonable price.
Yeah. And it's, to me, it's kind of funny because there's like the top two trim levels, the GT line and the GT line turbo, are the only ones that come with a multi-link rear suspension. The rest all come with a, what is it?
It's solid beam rear axle.
Yes. Yeah. It's the less sophisticated rear suspension.
The log, as Dave Coleman calls it.
But you know what? Even the top two trims, they don't really drive that well. So it's kind of like, I don't really feel like you're paying extra money to get better driving dynamics. But again, by the time you get the GT line or the GT line turbo, which is the most powerful engine that you get with it, you're getting all those tech features we just mentioned. You're getting like a leather interior, and it's a cool looking leather interior, and the car still is very quiet and comfortable. And I always have to remind myself that not everyone is looking to get, you know, the best quarter mile or Nürburgring lap time. Some people just want to go to and from work in comfort with some nice features inside. And I would argue that if that's the type of driver you are, and that's who most drivers are, the K4 is as good or better than a Civic or a Corolla, because it's not quite as exciting to drive, but it's more luxurious and certainly more loaded with tech and value.
And it's a sedan that doesn't, I mean, it looks sort of like a fastback or something, but it is a sedan, and those are very, very rare, increasingly rare. So it's good that we have choices. You know, it's not just another crossover utility. Michelle?
Is it a manual transmission, or does it just come in automatic?
Only automatic, sadly.
Automatic only. So.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Oh. We've got 40 seconds.
And we've
40
got
40 seconds to go.
Yeah. Well, we have to recognize Carl.
Let's spend all 40 seconds thanking Carl for coming on. Carl, you're great.
And how many times can we say icycars.com in 5 minutes or 5 seconds?
It's like one of those radio shows. Icy cars.
There you go.
And let's say autoweek.com too. And name of Michelle's legal firm is. I don't know what that is.
But I don't take referrals.
Okay, no referrals. All right. That is all we got for you this week. Check us out on Facebook. Where you can see more about us, and we will see you next week here on The Car Show.
Donate your used car, truck, or boat to the KPFK Vehicle Donation Program. It's an easy way to help support KPFK and receive a tax deduction. All you have to do is call 877-KPFK-AUTO. An operator will arrange a good time to pick up your vehicle. 877-KPFK-AUTO, or go online to kpfk.org.
DJ Namde from Radio Aphrodisia. Join us every Saturday as we nice up your weekend. It's all about music from Africa and the African world. Radio Aphrodisia, 4 to 6 p.m. It's Champeta Criolla from the coast of Caribbean, Soca Calypso, Juju Music, Musica Afro-Cubana, Cha-Cha-Cha, Afrobeat High Life. It's all in the mix. Radio Aphrodisia, Saturdays, 4 to 6 p.m.